Hello, folks. Welcome to your Paul Revere Show. This is attorney Mark Thompson. We are here every Monday night at 7 p.m. on WAUK 540 a.m. and 101.1 FM. As you all know, our theme is always keep Wisconsin moving forward. It's our state motto. And, you know, in the world today and all the threats on democracy, it's sometimes hard to think about how to keep going forward. But hey, tonight I'm honored to have back Representative Greta Neubauer, who is the fearless leader in the Assembly for the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Hello, Greta. Welcome.
Thank you, Mark. Always a joy to be with you.
My listeners and I, we get the privilege of spending the next half hour with you. So I'm really, really excited to hear about what is happening. You know, you guys are wrapping up a session. There's a lot going on here. We're wrapping up 2023. Around the corner, 2024, we're going to have major decisions coming down from the Wisconsin Supreme Court on new maps. We're going to have spring elections. We've got a president up for election next year. So in the helm, there you are in Madison leading the way. What's on the plate?
Oh, well, as you said, there is a lot going on up in Madison and, of course, in Wisconsin in general. We are very pleased that the case challenging Wisconsin's gerrymandered maps is moving forward in the Supreme Court. This, of course, is a source of great hope for many of us in Wisconsin who have seen the impact of gerrymandered maps on our politics. Of course, I'm sure your listeners have been paying attention to threats to impeach Justice Protasiewicz, coming particularly from Speaker Robin Voss. It does seem like that threat is receding for the moment. I think they realize that they just simply did not have a case to impeach Justice Protasiewicz or the political will to get it done. So we are really pleased to see that case moving forward. And that means that we are already starting to prepare, of course, for next year. For the possibility that we could have new maps, fair maps, and be competing for the majority alongside protecting Tammy Baldwin and Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
So let's just talk through sort of what it means from your vantage point of how do you go about getting ready for new maps? You know, a lot of folks, I don't know if they know the nuances of it and how it comes about. You know, frankly, for years and years prior to Voss and Company's redesign of the state, you know, and having gerrymandered maps, completely gerrymandered. I mean, maps have always historically been somewhat gerrymandered. There's always politics, but when Governor Walker and now Speaker Voss redesigned the state. I mean, I just always remind people there was a federal court that had said the maps were so bad, they were unconstitutional, that it was just so unfair that if you were a progressive and a Democrat, literally you never had a chance of having a majority in Madison. You know, I don't think people think of democracy that way, but so that's the background. So how do you, how do you approach it at this stage? I mean,
yeah,
there's a lawsuit happening.
Yep.
And who knows what's going to happen there, but there's going to be something. And so what happens at your level in terms of getting ready?
Yes. So the case, as we said, is moving forward in front of the court. Oral arguments coming soon. Hopefully the court will determine whether or not these maps are unconstitutional in the near future, in the next couple of months. And then hopefully we will have a remedy, so new maps, by the time our candidates put their names on the ballot. We take out papers, nomination papers, April 15th in the legislature, and people have to submit those by June 1st. So we really need maps to come, hopefully by March. Late March, of course, would mean we're scrambling to get candidates for all 99 seats in the state assembly, but we are going to do that. We are going to have a candidate in every seat. And so right now we're talking to folks from across the state of Wisconsin, some of whom have run before, some of whom maybe hold other offices, local offices in their communities, about what it means to run for assembly, about what it will mean to be part of the 99 candidates who are trying to take the majority in the state legislature, in the assembly. And of course, it's difficult when you don't have maps. You don't know what the districts will look like or what areas will necessarily be competitive. But we do know what the maps have looked like in the past. We know what they look like now. We can find communities where they may have been voters may have been cracked or packed to dilute their voting power. And we focus, of course, on those areas and making sure that we are talking to strong potential candidates and helping them get ready to run. So if your listeners are some of those people who might be interested in running for office and being part of this effort to take the majority in Wisconsin, we would love to talk to them.
And if somebody's interested and looking, what's the best process for that? Like, who do they call and how do they reach out?
Who are you going to call, right? You're going to call the Assembly Democrats. So you can find us online, on social media. We are happy to talk to anyone who's interested in running. We, of course, look at the maps now and are prepared if we have these same maps for the election next year. But we are also recruiting often multiple candidates per district so that we have people spread all across the state. And if we do get new maps, we can layer those maps onto the map and hopefully onto the state of Wisconsin and hopefully have a great candidate ready to run in every single district.
So as the leader on the assembly side, how do you just handle, you know, if you have two candidates running in a primary? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I think people sometimes just don't know how that works.
Then yeah. So
if there are people running.
Yes, it's a great question. The Assembly Democrats do not get involved in primaries for open seats. So if we have two people who come to us and say, I want to run in X district, and here's what I believe and who I am, we will provide what we call structural support to both of those candidates to help them get on the ballot, to help them run their campaign and see who comes out of that primary. We, of course, do work with our incumbents to hopefully help them hold their seats as well, particularly in those competitive seats. We've got Steve Doyle out in the La Crosse area, who's been holding on to a Trump 1 district for many cycles. So we work with those candidates, particularly closely, those in competitive seats too, to help them in those general elections, because those races get pretty expensive and we want to make sure that our candidates are able to compete.
You know, you talk about just the expenses, you know, how has fundraising really changed over the last 5 years? What have you seen just in terms of how it impacts a typical assembly race? And folks, right, we got 99 in the state, you know, and so it's, and some, you know, I get calls every day asking for money, and, you know, I'm hoping most people don't, but anyway.
Sounds like you're on the list, Mark.
How has it changed?
I mean, the big thing is just that these races are really, really expensive. So last cycle in those really competitive seats, the essentially 50-50 seats, for the state assembly, we were spending up to about $1 million per race. That's a lot of money, right? To win one of 99 assembly seats. But last cycle, we were in the position of defending Governor Evers' veto. And all of those seats at the margin were so incredibly important. We needed to win Steve Doyle's seat, right? We needed to win some of those other ones that were close seats. And we saw that kind of spending on both sides. you got to send out mail, right? And reach people on digital. And we know that our candidates are going to be attacked on television. And so we have to introduce the public to our candidates and make sure that people know who they are and know what they stand for. And then, of course, we run a really serious field operation. The best thing that we have in the state assembly is that our candidates actually can go out and knock on just about every door for the voters that they need to support them in the election. Our districts are small enough that we can hit those doors and have those direct conversations. And we know how important those are, not only for persuading voters to support our candidates, but also persuading them to show up in general and to continue participating in our democracy. Because when they meet you, right, and they understand who you are and the values you share, even if maybe you haven't historically supported the same party, you know, voters are much more likely to come out, and that's sometimes the push that they need to continue engaging, even when they're disillusioned by the process in general.
You know, you had touched on it at the outset. You'd mentioned that Speaker Robin Voss, it looked like he was backing off his threats to try to impeach Justice Janet Protasiewicz. You know, you've been in Madison the last few weeks. What do you hear sort of under the surface about that?
I think what's really clear is that the very strong pushback that Republican legislators received from their constituents and from people around the state and around the country really mattered. I know that many of us have felt those impacts of gerrymandering, and that sometimes it feels like no matter what the public thinks about an issue, Republican legislators are just not going to listen. But that was not the case here. We saw people showing up to Republican legislators' yard sales and local events and calling their offices and making sure that they understood that impeaching Justice Protasiewicz, when there were no real grounds to do so, was crossing a line that they could never go back. And that vote would define the rest of their career. And so that really mattered. I think what we saw was members of the Republican caucuses going to their leadership and saying, I don't want to take this vote. Do not bring Justice Protasiewicz's impeachment in front of the Assembly and the Senate. And so I hope that folks feel really good about that.
Attorney Mark Thompson, this is your Paul Revere Show. We are here with our fierce leader in the Assembly Democratic Party, Greta Neubauer. We'll be back with more. Welcome back, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere Show. We are here every Monday night from 7 to 8 p.m. WAUK 540 AM 101.1 FM. I'm honored and privileged to have Representative Greta Neubauer with us. The Assembly is going to be wrapping up, what, this week, next week?
Tomorrow, theoretically.
So, you know, you've really been in the heat of it. There's been a lot of attack from the far right on the UW system, on the issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion, you know, just micromanaging the system. Where are we at in that shakeout legislatively? And, you know, is there like, what's the ground look like? And do we have hope for our educational system? I mean, it's one of the things that everyone around the country used to admire about Wisconsin was our university system around the state, providing first-class education for, right, everybody. And not just, you know, the mega wealthy or the affluent. And so where are we at?
Yeah, absolutely. So tomorrow is the last day of this calendar year that the Assembly intends to be in session. And I think that's true for the Senate as well. Then, of course, we come back in January and have a few more months as we wrap up the session for this cycle before we get back into campaigning. What we've seen this year are, you know, increasing attacks on the UW system from the Republican legislature. First, we saw them refuse to give the increase that the UW system asked for in the state budget and, in fact, cut resources over $30 million, claiming that that was what the UW spent on diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. They attempted to cut 200 positions. Thankfully, the governor was able to line item veto that. So those positions were not cut in the budget. And then we recently have seen Republicans refuse to give UW employees their raises. So every budget cycle, the legislature attempts, hopefully, right, to give state employees their raises. We gave raises to every other state employee, but Republicans have held back the raises for UW employees. And that's over 35,000 people in Wisconsin. This is faculty, staff, everybody working for the UW system. And it is purely this vindictive and wrongheaded attack on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Robin Voss, in particular, has made it his mission to try to rid the UW system of diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, which we know will mean less resources for students who need them, right? This is everything from first generation to LGBTQ students to low-income students or students of color. And we know that the workplace in general, right, demands students to be ready to work in a diverse environment. We know that companies across Wisconsin and across the country have embraced DEI initiatives because they understand that this is the world that we live in and it makes the workplace better for everyone and makes us all more successful when we have workplaces that are accommodating to all of us. And so it's really incredibly disappointing. And I, of course, hope that we will be able to make progress both on providing the support UW system needs. I'm in the Racine area. We've got UW Parkside here. We've got almost 10% of the staff, the employees at Parkside that are going to be laid off because of lack of funds. And then the rest of them that are still not receiving their raises. The hope here is that legislators who represent these districts, including many Republicans who represent UW campuses, will feel pressure to change direction. And they will understand that undermining the UW system, the universities of Wisconsin, as we call them now, is undermining our local economies and the success of the future of Wisconsin. And I hope would encourage everyone to keep pushing and to make sure that legislators hear your voice on this critical issue.
Are you hearing, are there any cracks among, you know, some of the Republicans that are not nearly as far right that, you know, I mean, from a pure business sense, if you're going to compete in the world, you know, if you travel, you know, my son went to Spain for college, you know, he went to he went to Madison, but he went to Minnesota. And I mean, he opted, you know, he fell in love in Minnesota and stayed there. But the, you know, conversations would be 3-4 languages and everybody would talk, and you know, they're talking about the future of where everything is going. How can people attack diversity in education when that's what the world is, and the only way an American kid can compete is to be there? I mean, are they cracking somewhere?
I think there is, right? A couple examples I'll point to on the raises for employees of the Universities of Wisconsin. We saw Howard Markline in our committee meeting pushing back. He represents Platteville. He wants those employees to get raises. I'm sure he's hearing from them, right? There are other, particularly Republican senators who represent campuses that I do think want to see these raises, and hopefully they will continue to push their leadership to move this forward. We also have seen this ongoing attack on the new engineering building at UW-Madison, right? Republican legislators refusing to fund this despite an overwhelming number of business leaders in the engineering sector and, you know, related industries saying, we really need people to be trained in Wisconsin who are going to come and work for us. It just makes absolutely no sense. And I hope that the threat of fair maps, right, and the pressure coming from the public will lead Republicans to be open, right, to doing the right thing for the people of Wisconsin and recognizing how important it is to support our young people and those who are working to get an education.
So just looking ahead now into 2024, what do you see the priorities are? And if we have listeners that really want to weigh in and help make a difference, where should they be focusing their attention?
Well, a lot will still happen in the legislature this session, January, February, maybe March. We're going to be continuing to discuss issues around the economy and workforce. Tomorrow, we will be voting in the assembly on the governor's special session proposal and really on the Republicans' alternative to it, which of course does not address the issues facing our educational system or childcare sector or so many other important areas that we could discuss tomorrow. So we're going to just continue to focus on the issues we hear about from Wisconsinites, the economy, the cost of healthcare, supporting their kids' education, making sure everyone feels safe and welcome in our state. There's a lot to do. There's a lot of bills still moving forward. And then, of course, we will be continuing to talk about these issues with voters on the doors next year and making clear the vision that we have for Wisconsin.
Thank you so much, Greta Neubauer, our fearless representative trying to save us and keep our democracy moving forward. We thank you very, very much. We wish you the best. Good luck tomorrow. Folks, this is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere Show. We are here every Monday night, 7 to 8, WAUK, 540 AM. Be right back. Attorney Mark Thompson, this is your Paul Revere Show. We are here every Monday night from 7 to 8 p.m. WAUK 540 AM 101.1 FM. I'm delighted to have back with me tonight Dr. Robert Craig, the head of Citizen Action Wisconsin, to talk about what it looks like at the street level and some help in an analysis of where we're at politically at the end of 2023 here, looking into 2024. So welcome back, Dr. Craig.
Great to be back on with you, Mark.
So just remind my listeners a little bit about what is Citizen Action? What is its mission? And how did you get involved with it?
So we're a statewide membership group, social justice organizing, multi-issue. We're nearing our 40th birthday, so founded in the early Reagan administration. And we build grassroots power. We have members, they work together in chapters we call organizing co-ops around the state. And they work on big issues that would improve people's lives. We're very well known for our work to guarantee affordable health care for everyone. We've worked on a number of other issues over the years. We work in elections. We've developed over the last few years a major emphasis on the nexus between climate change, where we need to adapt quickly, and racial and economic justice. And a lot of the income inequality that you're well aware of, Mark, that's built up the last 40 years, where we went from having the largest middle class in the world to something looking much more like the Gilded Age, really a green revolution to prevent climate crisis is a new opportunity to reinvent the economy in a much more equitable way. And that creates a strong union movement as well, which is central to any functioning middle class and just society.
So as you look at the lay of the land, looking at 2024 and the key elections that are going to be taking place, how do you, as the head of Citizen Action, view the tasks ahead for Citizen Action? And, you know, like what are some of your plans, and just fill in up my listeners.
So there's, by the way, I want to, your listeners are very well informed. They're listening to your show, but I would just say that there's a lot of hand-wringing about polling right now. I mean, it looked dire for President Obama at this time, before his re-election against Mitt Romney. Bill Clinton looked like he was in trouble a year out. And so the media is making far too much and making people focus on opinion polling, which will have little to do with how people actually vote on election day. And so we need to play the long game. Democracy is at risk, because we really have had a conservative movement that's taken over one of the major parties and is seeking minority rule. And that's the non-MAGA part of the Republican Party is fine with voter suppression, right? Like photo ID, gerrymandering of a state legislature like Wisconsin. There is a divide among them between, is there any limit? Would you actually try to cancel an election after the fact, and which President Trump attempted to do? But democracy is partly protecting what's the mechanisms of voting, fair voting, which you know a lot about, Mark, I know. But it's also about what is democracy's purpose. It's to have government that is responsive to the people, responds to their needs and what they want, and is not captured by big economic interests, by the wealthiest among us. And it means the only way to do that, the only way to balance the organized money that wealthier people and large corporations have, is organized people. And so rebuilding democracy is partly bringing people together to engage. Democracy is a spectator sport, not a spectator sport. It's a participatory sport. And that is also how to win the 2024 election. If enough people are engaged and talk to each other and join things that we have developed over the years with others in other parts of the country, such as a Deep Canvas program, that is extremely impactful when you have conversations in depth with people in your community, much more effective than the TV ads, actually, that cloud and often pollute our airwaves. And so we're trying to build that to a higher level in 2024, but it doesn't just end in the election. Then you have a movement that can actually get things done, because government, democracy has to produce for people again. It stopped delivering on people's needs and started delivering on corporate needs and the needs of billionaires, because they've been pulling all the strings.
So that was a lot to digest. So let me just break down some of it. All right. You mentioned polling, but I did check out on the Citizen Action webpage. You had a reference that the Marquette University poll showed 57% of voters disapproving of their legislature. How do you understand that? What do you think the significance of that is to plans of going ahead?
And to be fair, we have a large diverse team. I didn't make the post, but I did know what the thought of it is. We've had a legislature that guaranteed itself control. Republican majority that in 2010, after one wave election, changed the process of apportionment, that is what districts people are in, so that they can't lose no matter how people vote overall in the election. There was an election in 2018 where 52% of the people who voted in state assembly seats voted for the Democrats, and it produced a two-thirds majority for Republicans nonetheless. And so, well, that leads to an unresponsive legislature that's going to be less popular. I think that's what the person who made the post and her team is driving at. And Robin Voss, the very powerful assembly speaker, hinted that at the beginning of this legislative session, where he said he hoped that his caucus, that is the Republicans who had control, would act more in accordance with public opinion than they have in previous sessions. Well, you can't say that if you actually have to face fair elections and the chance of losing your seat in the next election. They've guaranteed that can't happen. They're about to face likely much fairer maps. In other words, a case is moving to a new Supreme Court that changed orientation because of a large voter upsurge in the spring that elected Judge Janet Protasiewicz. And likely there's going to be different maps. And a lot of these Republicans who aren't used to doing it are going to have to actually face the prospect of losing re-election if they can't defend their records.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Justice Janet Protasiewicz's victory. That was an 11-point margin of victory. I mean, that was recent elections. Quite astounding, given how purple Wisconsin is. You know, that, I mean, that was a huge vote to move on and move forward, and for fairness and for women. You know, I don't think we can ignore the fact that the reversal of Roe has had a profound impact. So, I want to ask before I jump into something, because you mentioned deep canvas. I don't know if a lot of listeners know what that is, but you said it in a way that you thought it was pretty important in terms of understanding how to organize and where we're going. So, what is this concept of deep canvas, and how does that impact 2024 and voting and organizing and developing progressive around the state?
Great question, Mark. So people have general familiarity with canvassing, like in elections, knock on a door, make a phone call, very short kind of rap, just to tell them to vote for the candidate the person is volunteering for or working for. I can tell you, and I've talked to people recently doing politics on the Democratic side, not necessarily the party, that they try to get to 100 and 125 doors per hour. Those are not long conversations. What a deep canvas does is it tries to have much deeper conversations with voters that listen to the voter, and it works to make sure those are people who live in the same area and the same community, either at the door or on the phone. And those are more impactful conversations where you might learn that someone is very concerned that they can't afford health care, may have gone because 60% of bankruptcies are caused by medical debt. But also may have been terrified by Republican claims that somehow people from south of the border, immigrants, are coming in or are going to harm them in some way. And a deep canvas allows you to talk with them about who is sending those signals out about immigrants to divide us, essentially, and what their motives might be, and get them to understand that we all have an interest in affordable health care, and to not listen to those kind of cultural wedge issue that conservatives are so good at using to keep us divided. And it's very effective. I mean, there are some people who won't talk to you, who are really dug in, have watched a bit too much Fox News or what's on social media from the right. But there's a good 15-20% that will be with you and stay with you once they've talked to a neighbor, someone in their own community, and had a deeper conversation. And the question is, it's very effective in terms of the percentage of effect on people. We need more people doing it, getting the training and going out in the field with us. And so the big question is, can enough people stop just watching cable TV and rooting for the right side, come out and make phone calls, go door to door? And it's a community thing. You meet other people that are doing the same thing in your community, and it recreates a sense of community that's been lost in the United States in recent years. So we think it's transformational in a way of defending democracy and also deepening democracy and making it what it is, it ought to be from the beginning. That is, it's for people to run, not for big lobbyists, people who spend hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, on campaign money, and it's dark money. Often could be one person behind it. You don't know that.
So the if there are listeners out there that have an interest in learning more about Deep Canvas or participating, what's the easiest way to get hold of you or to figure out what they can do?
You can go to our website, Citizen Action of Wisconsin, and there's both the general information. You can make a request. There's also our whole staff list is transparent with everyone's number, including mine and their email address. But you can also just send a general message. We're very active on social media. So one can interact with us on Facebook, on, I guess, formerly Twitter, now X, Instagram. So, and you can just, or if you're old school, just call the number on our website and call our office or stop by. If you're in Milwaukee, you can stop by. We have a Fleet Street office. It's storefront with a big sign. It's over kind of several blocks east of where this big school administration building is for Milwaukee Public Schools.
Now, you've talked about Citizen Action being a statewide organizing membership group. Folks from Citizen Action have also run as candidates and got elected, right?
Absolutely, both members and board members of Citizen Action. So Congressman Mark Pocan, Senator Tammy Baldwin, former board members. Senator Jeff Smith, state senator, both a former member and a former organizer. Supreme Moore Mukunde, state representative, both a former member and a former organizer. Current members in the state legislature, Representative Christina Shelton from Green Bay, who's a real rising star. State Senator Chris Larson in Milwaukee, also a rising star and increasingly influential. And I'm missing some folks, but I'm saying that we have a lot of folk members who run for lower office too. What's really important is all the county board, school board, city council, and our folks are running all the time. We're helping them do it. We have a Movement Politics Academy, helps train candidates, people who've never run for office, to run for office the first time.
Folks, Dr. Robert Craig from Citizen Action is my guest. He'll be back on the other side of the break for more to talk about how to keep Wisconsin moving forward. This is your Paul Revere Show. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere Show. We are here every Monday night from 7 to 8 on WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM. Tonight, I'm honored to have Dr. Robert Craig, the head of Citizen Action Wisconsin, statewide organization. It's getting ready to celebrate its 40th anniversary in March of 2024. So they've been around a long, long time trying to move the football down the field of justice. You know, you had mentioned, Dr. Craig, the importance of unions and union organizing and democracy in the United States and in Wisconsin. The UAW just wrapped up probably the biggest strike of my life. I've been around a while. When I was younger, I was marching with the coal miners in D.C., but it's been a long time since the UAW played such a key role in democracy. They don't get a lot of press publicly. So how do you see the UAW strike have an impact in 2024 and going forward?
It itself was a triumph for democracy at the UAW. That is to say, they had a leadership for a long time that wouldn't engage the fight and was sort of just trying to lose as little as, just lose slowly and hold on to what they had as much as they could as the auto industry changed dramatically. The members elected after a lot of, this was years in the making, and they initially they did not win, a reform group led by Sean Fain. And he said, we can, if we stand together and strike, take the big three on. And not only that, inspire other auto workers who are kept out of unions in the United States, at Tesla and in a lot of the southern states. A lot of them are manufacturers that have come over from Europe or Japan and gone to the South where they can do it non-union and right-to-work states, that we can inspire them and show a union difference. And he pulled it off. He brought the big three to their knees with a very strategic, very effective strike, cost them over $1 billion, and got historic increases. And in fact, was supported in terms of, you know, the president has a lot of prestige. President Biden both stated at the beginning that historic profits require an historic contract. So one of the most pro-union statements a president of the United States ever made. And then he became the first president to walk a picket line. Believe it or not, it's never happened. And so just tremendous. And the reason unions, the UAW and unions in general, are so important is because if you have a union organized, and it's all the deck stacked, it's like our gerrymandered legislature. We don't have time to get into how the right to organize has been taken away, but it's really hard, even when most workers want a union, a vast majority in a facility, to actually win, given all of the cards that these big corporations hold now. It's not like the 1930s. They overcame that, and now they're on to trying to organize unorganized sectors. In addition to the wage increases they got organizing rights to electric battery plants, and that's the future. Electric vehicles. It's already starting to come in. It'll get very, very rapid. It's not just climate change. There are also better cars. You actually have more workers in making EVs if you have the battery plants and the assembly. So you can actually increase union, but if you only have assembly, you're going to have less workers than you do for gasoline engine cars. So they played the long game too. And now workers at Tesla, workers at the Japanese and European firms that are in the South and non-union are reaching out to UAW. How do we get what you got? And that hopefully is going to be the beginning of a renaissance. I think to codify it, we need fair elections and unions. And that's why if President Biden is reelected and we have a working majority in the Senate and the House, the Protect the Right to Organize Act is like redistricting reform in Wisconsin for unions. It would recreate fair elections. So workers who want a union can have a union and cannot be frustrated by their employers, by the largest, most powerful corporations in the world.
You know, you've been around the state and been around the country. Do you see a real excitement out there and the unorganized and looking to the UAW as a way forward? You know, I mean, you got Tesla. I mean, you got Elon Musk. I mean, he's out there, billionaire, left California, went to Texas, you know, building his own little satellite system. But people making his cars are working 15 hours a day and, you know, struggling. I mean, how do you see that playing out?
I think there's tremendous appetite for it. I mean, against all odds, and it will need labor law reform to get it to scale. But what Amazon workers did, winning that victory in Staten Island, and then what Starbucks workers have been doing against an industry that's set up so it's almost impossible, and shop by shop by shop under great pressure, there is tremendous appetite. And if you look at the current workforce, this is going to be a different. It's not going to be our grandfather's labor movement. This is going to be the most diverse labor movement in American history. This is going to be dominated by young people and people of color. And this is going to set up if we can revitalize the labor movement, and we have to create the conditions. We have to restore democracy on the shop floor and all the floors, in that this will be the basis for multiracial democracy and for a great progressive revival in this country. It is a much better base of power, as a balance of power against big corporations than anything else. There's always so much we can do as, you know, volunteer grassroots groups. We need both, actually. So we're building that, but we also need to allow the workers who want to restore the union movement to be allowed to do it and have the right, the democratic right, to form unions wherever they work.
I just wanted to touch on here with healthcare. Seems to me it's still a focus of everybody's day-to-day life, and it's still a mess. How is that going to play on the 2024, you know, election? You got 30 seconds.
It's a top public concern. Not a lot of elected officials have made it a political issue. That's what we're working on. There's a Badger public option bill we just worked with allies to introduce, which is the most comprehensive bill to control healthcare costs introduced in a decade in Wisconsin. That can help shape the elections here in Wisconsin in 2024. That's what we're working towards right now at Citizen Action Wisconsin with all of our members and a lot of supporters all over the state.
Folks, this is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere Show. Thank you so much, Dr. Robert Craig and Citizen Action of Wisconsin, for the insights. Folks, reach out, join your unions, contact Citizen Action. Get active, folks. We can absolutely move forward in 2024. Good night. Sleep well.